Escapement on the Quijack River is 5 days behind where it should be to meet the lower end of its escapement goal, 2 million sockeye. The Wood River has already posted nearly double its top escapement goal of 1.8 million. Escapement on the other Bristol Bay rivers is sitting on a spectrum between the Quijack and Wood. It's July 5th. I'm your host, Avery Lill. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
On tonight's show, we'll talk with management biologist Travis Ellison about Quijack escapement. In the Nooshigak District, the Wood River Special Harvest Area has been open to set net gear since Saturday. We found a crew from Coffee Point who's tried it out, but is sticking with their mud on Nooshigak Bay.
Yeah, these guys went up there for one day. I think you guys caught two fish or
we
something?
We caught two fish, which was, I think, two more than anyone else.
Then how did Dead Man Sands and Quijack come by its name? Tim Troll gives us one possible answer when he tells the story of the bloody 5th of July.
But many boats could not move quickly. It was the peak of the run, and many were loaded to the gunwales. Boats started to swamp, roll and flip. Others were stuck on the sands. Fishermen were tossed in the water, some never to be seen again.
Those stories and more on tonight's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
Support for KDLG is made possible by generous support from the Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association, advocating for fishermen, online at bristolbayfishermen.org.
Before we go any further, a look at those numbers. In Ugashik, the daily catch yesterday was 110,000 sockeye for a season cumulative of 341,000. Daily escapement on the Ugashik River yesterday was 16,700 for a cumulative 34,800. The in-river estimate was 70,000, total run 446,000. In Igigik, 157,000 sockeye caught yesterday, bringing the season cumulative harvest to 1.1 million. Daily escapement, 96,700, bringing the cumulative escapement to 534,000. The in-river estimate was 80,000, bringing the total run to Igigik to 1.7 million. Naknek Quijack caught 147,000 yesterday for a cumulative harvest of 606,000. Daily escapement was 141,000 for a cumulative 663,000. The in-river estimate in the Naknek Quijack District was 75,000. Total run to the whole district was 1.3 million. So let's break that down by river. The Alagnak River posted a daily escapement yesterday of 51,800 sockeye for a cumulative of 64,800. Quijack River posted 73,500 for a cumulative 92,000. It's the Quijack River again that manages for a bottom escapement of 2 million. Then there's the Naknek River. 15,700 sockeye escaped upriver yesterday for a season cumulative of 500,000. The bottom escapement goal for the Naknek River is 800,000. In the Nooshigak District, 835,000 sockeye caught yesterday for a season cumulative of 10.4 million. Escapement yesterday was 302,000 sockeye for a season cumulative escapement of 3.8 million. The total run so far to the district, 14.3 million. That's over the halfway point to the 22 million forecast to the Nooshigak district. Let's look at escapement in the Nooshigak by river. Past the Portage Creek sonar, 2,579 kings made it yesterday. 73,741 season total kings escaped up the Nooshigak River. 32,000 sockeye made it past the Portage Creek sonar yesterday for a season cumulative 415,000. 26,750 chums made it up yesterday for a season cumulative 492,000. On the Wood River, 247,900 escapement yesterday, with another 68,700 before 6 a.m. this morning. That brings escapement on the Wood River to 3.4 million. Counting Tower at Agushik saw 22,000 sockeye pass the tower last night, another 4,400 by 6 a.m. this morning. That leaves the season total at 147,000. Togiak saw its first full day of counting yesterday. It saw 420 sockeye, another 414 by 6 a.m. this morning, so a total of 514 escapement counted in Togiak. In Togiak, the daily catch yesterday was 12,000, for a season cumulative of 32,400. Daily escapement in Togiak again, 420, so that brings the total run to 32,912. The Bristol Bay total run, Bristol Bay total catch yesterday, 1.2 million, for a cumulative 12.5 million catch this season in all five districts. Daily escapement yesterday in the Bay, 557,000 sockeye, for a cumulative 5.1 million. In-river estimate, 225,000, for a total run to all five districts so far of 17.8 million. Let's look at the sockeye per drift delivery. In Ugashik, big deliveries, 1,169 sockeye per drift delivery average. Igigik, 361. Naknek-Quijak, 607. Nushigak, 649. Togiak, 100. As far as vessel registration, by 9 a.m., Igigik had 317 permits registered on 260 vessels. 260 vessels in 48 hours as things remain steady, 57 D-boats. In the Naknek-Quijak, 224 permits on 200 vessels. In 48 hours, 265 vessels will be in the district, 24 D-boats. In the Nushigak district, 906 permits on 674 vessels, 231 D-boats. In 48 hours, there will be 673 vessels. In Togiak, 36 permits on 36 vessels, and things will remain steady for 48 hours. In Ugashik, 121 permits on 93 vessels. That makes for 28 D-boats. There will be 105 vessels there in 48 hours. Moving to the Alaska Peninsula. Yesterday, 69 Chinook were caught, for a season cumulative of 5,873 in the Alaska Peninsula Management Area. 25,299 sockeye caught yesterday, for a season cumulative of 1 million. Let's break that down by peninsula. In the South Peninsula, there's been no post-June harvest in Cold Bay, Thin Point section, the Morozovi Bay to South Unimak, the Shumagin Islands, or the Southeastern District mainland, or the Northwest Stepovac section. The Dolgoy Island area, the season total harvest right now sits at 8,392 sockeye. The season total harvest in the June Shumagin Islands, so this again, this was sockeye caught in June, 403,968. In June, the South Unimak Islands caught 400,135. That means that in the South Peninsula Management Area, 812,000 sockeye caught. In the North Peninsula area, 1,270 Chinook caught total this season, 188,670 sockeye caught total this season. Those come largely from Port Moeller to Outer Port Hyden and Nelson Lagoon. In Nelson Lagoon, the season total sits at 20,000 sockeye. From Port Moeller to Outer Port Hyden, the season total sits at 169,000 sockeye. Let's look at the Port Moeller test fishery numbers. We have numbers from yesterday and today. So starting with July 4th. At Station 4, no fish were caught in the 4.5-inch mesh. No fish were caught in the 5 1/8-inch mesh. At Station 6, 11 in the 4.5, 14 in the 5 1/8. At Station 8, 17 in the 4.5, 10 in the 5 1/8. At Station 10, 9 in the 4.5, 7 in the 5 1/8. At Station 12, 10 in the 4.5, 7 in the 5 1/8. At station 14, 5 in the 4.5, 1 in the 5.125. At station 16, 30 in the 4.5, 8 in the 5.125. On July 4th, a total of 82 sockeye were caught in the 4.5, 47 in the 5.125. The mean daily catch index from stations 2 to 10 was 36. The mean daily catch index from stations 2 to 24 was 40. Again, on July 4th, stations 4 through 16 were fished. Those same stations were fished again today, 4 through 16, starting at station 4. 4 caught in the 4.5, 1 in the 5.125. At station 6, 16 in the 4.5, 15 in the 5.125. At station 8, 3 in the 4.5, 4 in the 5.125. At station 10, 1 in the 4.5, 2 in the 5.125. At station 12, 5 in the 4.5, 10 in the 5.125. At station 14, 20 in the 4.5, 19 in the 5.125. At station 16, 9 in the 4.5, 8 in the 5.125. Today, a total of 58 sockeye were caught in the 4.5-inch mesh, 59 in the 5.125. The mean daily catch index from stations 2 to 10 today was 25. The mean daily catch index from stations 2 to 24 was 43. That is it for your numbers. I'll be back in just a moment.
Support for the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report comes from Deep Sea Fisheries Incorporated, working to provide top-quality Alaskan seafood with a commitment to sustainable sourcing. Serving Bristol Bay salmon fishermen with the Big Creek Fisheries Shore Plant since 2008. More at deepseafisheries.com.
Support for KDLG comes from Nomar in Homer, Alaska, working year-round to make gear for Alaska fishermen and offering brailer and slush bags for the fishing season. Information at nomaralaska.com or 1-800-478-8364.
We're starting the show in the Naknek-Quijac District. The sockeye run going to the Quijac is underperforming, and KDLG's East Side reporter Mitch Borden sat down with Alaska Department of Fish and Game Area Management Biologist Travis Ellison to talk about it.
How are things going in the Naknek-Quijac?
Not very well today. The Quijac has been slow to start, and we're not seeing big numbers moving up the river. We've got a escapement of, well, including what's in the river, about around 200,000 total. That's what's through the tower, plus what we have estimated past the test fishery. We'd be looking for about 700,000 in river just to be tracking the bottom end of the escapement goal. So, yeah, we're about 500,000 fish behind right now.
So, you know, just from a biologist's point of view, why is that worrisome to you, and where does that leave you for your management plan?
So we use historical run timing to make our projections for where we think we'll be during the end of the season. And even using late run timing scenarios like we've seen the last 3 years, we're still projecting to be below 2 million fish by the end of the year. And the further you get into the season, the fewer days you got to work with, the greater the chances that, you know, they might not be coming. I still have a lot of hope that they are coming. July 3rd was the largest day at Port Muller Test Fishery. We haven't gotten the genetic samples from that. That'll be a big key to see what's in there. And if it continues to be 70-80% Nooshkak District, that's a bad sign for the Quijac. But if we're seeing, you know, a nice representation, 20-30% Quijac, then that gives us a lot of hope, and we might not have to take the drastic measures of moving into the special harvest area.
Could you explain why it's drastic to move in the special harvest area and what that means?
It completely changes the fishery. For one, we have alternate gear openings, so there's always people sitting by or not able to fish just because it is so small. We have a difficult time controlling escapement in the Naknek. We have a hard time catching fish a high enough exploitation rate to keep that within the escapement goal if it comes in big. And right now the Naknek's looking fairly strong, not necessarily huge, but it's doing well. And it's been a long time since we've been in there, and it just kind of, it reduces a lot of the opportunity and reduces, you know, the harvest power. And You know, it's not good for Chinook salmon either.
So it's a big deal if this happens. This isn't something that happens like every other year or something. This is like pretty big.
Right. Yeah. The Kwijak's been doing really well lately. And so, yeah, this is something that we haven't, no one really anticipated this, including myself.
Do you have at this point, like any thoughts of why the Kwijak may be underperforming compared to the Naknek, which is doing okay right now?
One thing that's pretty clear right now is that the 2-2 age class is missing. Igigik's not seeing them. We're not seeing them at Port Muller. And that's about 20% of the Kwijak forecast. So that right there could be a lower, reduce the whole run. And we'll see. It's too early. We don't have any samples specifically for Kwijak yet to see what's there.
When do you think you'll make the call of whether you'll push to the special harvest area?
We'll keep fishing in the Naknek section through Saturday morning. And then we'll be making the call probably about noon on Saturday whether or not we'll need to move into the special harvest area.
Could you just talk about the Naknek section and how it's doing okay, right?
Yeah, I mean, escapements are tracking all right there. But, I mean, harvest is way down this year. So, I mean, and there's also not a very, very small fleet here for the Naknek as far as number of drift boats. You know, we've got a cumulative catch of 600,000 Naknek Kwijak District this season. You know, a couple years ago, we had 10 days in a row where we harvested over 1 million fish a day. So, I mean, it's a stark contrast to the runs we had a couple of years ago. And with the Nooshgak being what appears to be potentially another record run, you know, it makes sense to go where the fish are.
But since there is a small fleet, you know, does that mean that fishermen over here are doing pretty well with their average hauls?
There's been some decent periods, but just a couple. It's not like in the Nooshgak where it's been every tide people are catching fish. Here we've had a few where it was okay. And so far, early reports are that today was pretty decent fishing, so that's a good sign. But it'll take a little time to figure out whether or not how much of that was from Kwijak fish or if that's just the Naknek having another pulse.
So at this point, does it say that it's not the end of the world essentially yet, no, but you are feeling a little antsy about what you're seeing out there?
Yeah, we're definitely at that point in the run where we either need to take some action and respond to what we're seeing this season. And if we wait two more days, you know, we thought about it. If we wait two more days, it might be too late to get fish coming in. I mean, based on Port Muller, I expect a fair amount of Kwijak fish to show up over the next 4 days. But there's no telling how many and what does show up. We need to get up river. So hopefully if we can have a big shot and, you know, catch up on the escapement curve, we can get back to fishing even in the Kwijak section with the set nets.
So the set nets aren't out right now?
For this next fishing period, that's this evening, the Kwijak set nets closed. That's kind of the first step to reduce the harvest of Kwijak fish.
Well, thanks, Travis, for talking with me today.
It's been a big week of record-breaking catches in the Nooshgak District, but the scene is markedly different than last year, when Million Sockeye Catch Days maxed out processing capacity and many buyers put their fleets on limits. I checked in with Warner Liu, fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods, a couple of days ago.
Well, the fleet's busy, but the catch is spread out amongst a record number of boats, so we are far from being tested on the processing side. Maybe Icicle could have more of our own boats come over from other districts, but I think the more interesting question is that other traditionally east side companies are more represented in the Nooshgak District.
So I posed that question to area management biologist Tim Sands, who confirmed that processing is not backlogged the way it was this time last summer, at least in part because the large Nooshgak run and lower runs in other districts have drawn effort from boats and buyers who traditionally stick to east side districts.
There's a bunch of small operators that just kind of do their own fish. But really, the big difference this year is there's one buyer here that wasn't here last year. That's Alaska General Seafoods.
Even with the big catches, the Nooshkak fleet is far from plugging the rivers. All three rivers in the district are very near or have met their escapement goals. The Agushik River is managed for between 150,000 and 400,000 escapement. As of 6 a.m. this morning, it was just 3,000 fish away from meeting the bottom end of its escapement goal. Nooshkak met its bottom escapement goal on July 3rd, and now it's just 200,000 away from its mid-range. The Nooshkak River is managed for between 370,000 and 900,000 sockeye. Then there's the Wood River. It met its low escapement goal on June 28th. It's managed for between 700,000 and 1.8 million fish. The Wood River is now pushing double its top escapement goal. More on the Wood River after a short break.
Support for KDLG comes from Alaska Eagle Eye, locally owned and operated with car, truck, tool, equipment, and adventure gear rentals at the King Salmon Airport. Committed to getting you on your way in Bristol Bay. Reservations at 246-CARS.
The Wood River Special Harvest Area has been open to set net gear since Saturday, when sockeye escapement passed 1.1 million. The river saw record-breaking escapement of more than a million on Monday and big numbers most of the week. However, set netters Matt Crimp, Galen Eggleston, and Piper Kurtz are still heading out to their patch of mud near Coffee Point. KDLG's Austin Fast celebrated a breezy Independence Day on the water with them. The fishermen explained why they're staying in the Nooshkak District. Crimp speaks first. Kurtz is the second voice that you'll hear.
My brother James motored up there. What did you guys go up here there like 3 days ago when it opened something?
We went up for the opener, yeah.
Yeah, I went up for the opener. Was pretty lackluster from what I believe.
Yeah, barely any fish.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately with the Wood River, if you don't have a couple of sites, it's usually not particularly lucrative up there. So I mean we know a couple guys who have some of those sites, and I think they're doing pretty well, but yeah, I think it just kind of made sense for us to stay out here, and like we know this beach really well and still been pretty good fishing out here too. So
it also frees up some space on the beach, which means less nets, so right. More fish for us out here.
Yeah, so if more fishermen go down into the wood, there's less nets to catch the fish up in the bay here. So
there you go. Yeah, that makes sense. So you were just there for one day to try it out?
Yeah, these guys went up there for one day. I think you guys caught two fish or
we
something?
We caught two fish, which was, I think, two more than anyone else.
Seems like it's been doing better though.
Yeah, the wood's been doing way better since then. It was just like they opened us like the end of a flood, and then like just wasn't much fish at that point.
Unfortunately, the fireworks on Kanakanak Beach were far more dynamic than the 4th of July fishing for the Crimp crew. Fisheries reporter Austin Fast will take us along for their slow day on Coffee Point on tomorrow night's show. Now to close out tonight's show, we've got a real treat for you. Tim Troll, Executive Director of the Bristol Bay Land Trust and a Bristol Bay historian, takes us back to this fishery's sailboat days. Troll has produced a show called Our Story for KDLG in the past. In support of KDLG's fun drive, which begins next week, he wrote a brand new episode. It's about a landmark event that occurred on this day, July 5th, 70 years ago.
Hello, it's time once again for Our Story, occasional notes from the life, history, and lore of Bristol Bay in southwestern Alaska, brought to you by the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust for this, the 2018 fundraising drive of KDLG in Dillingham. It began as a calm day in Bristol Bay, July 5th, 1948, 70 years ago. The run was on, and fleets of cannery sailboats were loading up all over the bay. Suddenly, a strong wind came up. The waves rose, and sailboats were scurrying everywhere for cover, sails snugged down and wasting no time. But many boats could not move quickly. It was the peak of the run, and many were loaded to the gunwales. Boats started to swamp, roll, and flip. Others were stuck on the sands. Fishermen were tossed in the water. Some never to be seen again. Stanley Johnson, a monkey boat operator, described what he saw that day, July 5th. I watched a boat race by us, maybe 200 yards away, and then flip, and up and over she went. Well, all of us were frozen stiff at the sight. The boat went up and down, out of sight, then came up again, out of the trough of a wave bottom, side up with two men hanging on to the keel. Down she went again, out of sight, and up again with both men still hanging on. One of the men I knew for some time. He was wearing a yellow slicker. Waves and wind were tearing at them. Down and out of sight again, then up, and the guy with the yellow slicker was gone. We never saw him again. It was really murder to have to stand there helpless and watch that guy go. We couldn't toss a line that far. We tried tossing a life buoy, but couldn't reach them. Johnson would later write about his experience in the International Fisherman and Allied Worker, a union newspaper for fishermen, and coined the label the Bloody Fifth of July. He wrote, "That sudden wind, that 5th of July, cost us 5 known dead. It's a day I have a hard time forgetting, and remembering it makes me want to fight to build a stronger union, because there are things that need correcting." Well, one of those things needing correction was the sailboat. Fishermen, especially those who had just come back from the mechanized fighting of World War II, were fed up fishing in a 19th century relic in an age of jets and atomic energy. The Bloody 5th of July became something of a rallying cry to end the sailboats. The Fishermen's Union was pressing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they managed the Alaska fisheries in the territorial days, to get rid of those sailboats. The argument was that the fishermen who died on July 5th may still be alive if they had been fishing from powerboats. Well, the canneries were having nothing of it and pushed back. First, the canneries argued that power could not have prevented any of the deaths from the 1948 fishing season. Two of the fishermen were killed when their boat was overrun on a dark night by a power scow. The rest all died because they were overloaded when the storm came up. Next, the canneries made the argument that powerboats were even more dangerous for fishermen. Here is the testimony the canneries submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. "Men who have spent a lifetime in fishing with and without power, and who were present at the time in 1948, are of the view that the presence of power would not have saved a single life and might have resulted in the loss of additional fishermen. This for the reason that had these boats been propelled by power, there would have been a tendency for more fishermen to remain in exposed waters for a longer time. It would have been necessary for them to have started their engines under difficult and hazardous conditions. Furthermore, a sailboat, even when heavily loaded with fish, has a considerable buoyancy, and fishermen were rescued during this and other storms even after their vessels had swamped because the boats remained high enough out of the water for the fishermen to cling to them. A powered gillnet boat, on the other hand, when it swamps, will submerge because of the added weight of the engine and auxiliary equipment. A sailboat can be maneuvered when half full of water, while under such circumstances in a powerboat, the engine would not function. Powerboats can and will go aground as easily as sailboats, and because of the additional load of the engine and fuel, and fuel tanks, it would always be more difficult to maneuver off the beach or free from sands in stormy weather." The canneries continued, "Power failure could and would occur, and unless the present group of fishermen are eliminated from the fishery, i.e., the sailboat fishermen, and their places taken by men skilled in the operation of internal combustion engines, such failures will occur with utmost frequency. Whether the fishermen be skilled or unskilled in the operation of engines, their time and attention on fishing grounds is devoted largely to fishing and not to their power equipment. Most engine failures occur, one, because of the inability to start, or two, immediately after starting when engaging the clutch. The fishermen would be required to start their engines in open waters with boats heavily loaded with fish. In adverse weather conditions, the engines and ignition system would be subject to spray, not only rendering them difficult to start at critical times, but also subjecting them to grounding when submerged, explosions and fire are inherent risks not present in sailboats. The bloody 5th of July has come down in the lore of Bristol Bay commercial fishing history as the nail in the sailboat coffin. But how bad really was the 5th of July, 1948, and how many fishermen died? Where is the line between a good fisherman's story and the truth? Stanley Johnson, that monkey boat operator who witnessed one death, said five fishermen died on the 5th of July, 1948. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service first recorded 10 deaths and then later changed it to 6. A story in the National Fisherman in June of 1999 actually claimed that 26 fishermen died that day. The Seattle Times of Friday, July 9, 1948, only a few days later, reported that 5 fishermen died, but only one of them on the 5th of July. They were Gustav Olsen, 56, of Seattle, Washington, and Ole Lambic, 63, of Portland, Oregon, who were washed overboard from different boats on Friday, July 2nd. Hjalmar Harju, 57, of Kalama, Washington, and Oscar Peterson, 27, of Woodland, Washington, were drowned when their boat swamped Tuesday night, July 6th. Only Olaf Kolpin, 55, from San Francisco, apparently drowned on Monday, July 5th. Now, it is always possible that some deaths went unreported, but the likely truth is that one person drowned during a bad week of drownings caused by unusually bad weather during a good run of fish that first week of July, 1948. It also appears a good many boats did swamp that week, and a lot of picked fish were lost. Regardless of the date, the drownings that first week of July 1948 was a rallying cry for fishermen, and for once the canneries did not get their way. Power came into Bristol Bay after 66 years under sail in 1951. 67 years ago, in 1952, there were more power boats in Bristol Bay than sailboats. So this year, 2018, the number of years dominated by power boats in the bay will finally surpass the number of years under sail, a milestone in the 137-year history of the Bristol Bay commercial fishery. And in a historical side note, probably related to that stormy week in July of 1948, a team from the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey were out in Bristol Bay measuring water depths in Quechac Bay that summer. They published a map of the Quechac Bay channels in 1949, and for the first time, Dead Man Sands is recorded on a map and enters the official place name lexicon of Bristol Bay. So good luck fishing out there this year in your powerboats in this monumental year in the history of Bristol Bay. And you boat captains who are sitting in your warm, cozy cabin, sipping a cup of coffee, chatting on the radio with your buddies, or maybe yelling at your deckhands or boat pullers, chiding them for being slow pickers. And take a moment to remember those crusty old sailboat fishermen, those gentlemen of the waters. And remember that powerboats may indeed be more dangerous than sailboats. And if you are not careful, we may just have to bring those sailboats back again. For our story, I'm Tim Troll.
Now for messages to the fleet. There are a couple of birthday shout-outs for Hunter Berger on the fishing vessel Lulu. Mom and Dad say, hope you're having a great time. Love you lots. Graham says, a very happy birthday, Hunter. Love you. Miss you. Stay safe. See you soon. Happy 18th, Hunter, from all of us at KDLG as well.
Ang nikanu de respenun,
A man by the pen name of Feldman has been a faithful contributor on messages to the fleet this season, but he is discontinuing those messages. So, to provide you a different piece of cryptic nonsense to think about, we're switching to logic puzzles. Here are the basic rules. You're on an island with two types of people, knights and knaves. Knights always tell the truth, knaves only lie. Knights and Knave logic puzzle was first coined by Raymond Smullyan in 1978, and this particular one comes from the magazine Popular Mechanics. So here's the riddle. On the island of knights and knaves, you're approached by two people. The first one says to you, "We are both knaves." What are they actually? So one more time. You're on the island of knights and knaves. Two people greet you. The first person tells you, "We are both knaves." Are they both knaves? Are they both knights? Is one a knight and the other a knave? Which is which? Remember, knights always tell the truth. Knaves always lie. Tune in tomorrow for the answer. That'll do it for tonight. Don't forget to email or call with feedback or messages to the fleet. My email is avery@kdlg.org. The station's phone number is 907-842-5281. Thanks to KDLG's Austin Fast and Mitch Borden for their work on tonight's show. Also, a huge thank you to Tim Troll, who produced his episode of Our Story in support of KDLG's upcoming fund drive. That begins on Monday. We appreciate all of you who contributed to our station in the past and who are going to chip in this year. Your contributions make it possible for us to be on board with you during the summer and for us to provide regional news to the people of Bristol Bay year-round. I'm your host on tonight's show, Avery Lill. As always, check in tomorrow at 6, 10, and 2 a.m. for more coverage of the world's greatest commercial sockeye fishery.